My name is Pam Jeffords. I am a partner at Mercer Human Resources out of our Denver, Colorado office. And I have the enormous privilege of being able to lead our gender diversity practice and research appropriately for today called When Women Thrive, Businesses Thrive. I have the opportunity to travel around the world speaking to organizations about how to use data to drive their diversity and inclusion strategies. So it's a wonderful honor to be here today. And I would say that our panel here, both an honor and, you know, an obligation, because there's not going to be a lack of passion up here from any of us. So it's certainly an honor to be here, but it's also an obligation, because as we look at what the purpose of today is, it's to reframe how you're thinking about, how we're all thinking about gender diversity, and that you leave this this panel thinking something differently. So definitely it's an obligation on our part, and we're certainly happy to be a part of this conference. I will say, before I have the opportunity to introduce Angie Morgan, who will be your provocateur today, trying to provoke some thoughts, I will say that there's one strong point of view I have, which is, when you look at diversity and inclusion, it's not about minimizing our differences. It's really about understanding and valuing those differences. And at a conference like this, we tend to get together, and it doesn't matter what your background is, and you're going to see that Angie's and my background are very different. We'll sit down within 5 minutes, we're gonna figure out how we're the same and how we're alike, and we did. We talked about kids, and really what it's about is understanding that these panelists are different, and hopefully they're gonna have a different approach, a different thought, and really, you know, challenge yourself today that it's going to be so easy for us to find our similarities, that really explore and find our differences, and then how do we really leverage them? So with that, I have the great opportunity to introduce Angie, and one more keynote housekeeping item is we will be taking question and answer at the end, and so there'll be microphones set up for you, but if you have a question that you just want one of the panelists to answer, you can either tweet directly to me, it's at Pam Jeffords, at PamJeffords, I'm in your if you have your app open, or tweet to the conference, the hashtag TexasConfWomen. I'll watch those tweets, and if there's a quick question that you have that you want one of the panelists to answer, definitely tweet that to me, and I'll jump up and ask that at the end. But then we will have some opportunity, about 15 minutes, for some direct Q&A. So with that, I get to introduce Angie. I met Angie this morning, and again, as I said, we went to find our commonalities, which is our love and passion for college football. She didn't go to LSU. Yay, go Tigers. She went to Michigan, but she also served in the Marines, and very proud of that as an officer in the Marine Corps. So you'll hear some of her leadership stories there. But also, she's the founding partner of LeadStar. And what I really liked about listening to LeadStar is they also, similar to Mercer, use data and analytics to drive their diversity strategy. And she works with companies like Facebook, Google, ESPN, those that you probably haven't heard of. And interestingly, with Google, again, one of the powers of this conversation is, before I get up and speak, I always Google the words women and work, to see what the conversation's like. And there were today 1.2 billion hits on the word women and work, and it grows every time I Google it. It's just my thing. It's actually more topics than just the word. If you Google the word leadership, is around 200 million. So when you think about women and what we're doing today, it is the most Googled and searchable term right now. So with that, I have again the privilege. I'll be back with 15 minutes to spare to talk about some questions. But with that, I will turn it over to Angie.
Hey, thanks so much, Pam. Great job. And I cannot remember the last time I was in a room with so many women, but this is really inspiring. And so thank you for showing up. Thank you for your interest and curiosity on the subject of women in leadership. And we have a panel of badasses here today who are gonna, no holds barred, share with you their best practices. I'll introduce them, I'll talk a little bit about the subject, redefining leadership, and then the questions. I have questions, you have questions, they have answers. They've done it. They've seen it. They've led globally. They've led locally. They've done so many different things in their careers, so I don't want to stand between the awesomeness that they're about to share with us. So Nina Tassler, producer, author, you've got her bio in the magazine, or the booklet that we all got. You probably heard her keynote. We're so excited for her to be joining this panel today. We have Bobbi Dangerfield, Senior Vice President at Dell. Amazing career, Google her. She's done amazing things. We have some Dell women in the audience, Bobbi. We have Lee Clifford Drake. She's an amazing leader at Cisco, a director at Cisco. And fun fact, again, we were talking about commonalities. We both served the role as military spouse. And so she's got amazing career lessons to offer us. And finally, okay, so Cisco representing the audience. And finally, Susan Dougherty, someone we all want to know because she is the CEO of Canyon Ranch, but that's not been her only pursuit in her professional career. She also led in the automotive industry, and I know she's gonna talk about transitioning industry to industry today. But let's talk about why we're here. We're redefining leadership. I'm really excited about this conversation. When I joined the Marine Corps, I was in college. I was going through the ROTC program. None of the brochures that I was reading at the time or the commercials that I was seeing, they didn't talk to me about the gender dynamics of the Marine Corps. I kind of had a suspicion that I was joining a boys' club, but not until I got there did I realize out of 180,000 Marines, only 1,000 are female officers. That was pretty stark, though, when I started going through training, like, wow, I'm the only woman around here. I learned so many great things, learning how to lead in that organization. And when I transitioned out of the Marine Corps, I started a career in pharmaceutical sales. I had the easiest job in the world at the time. I was living in LA, and I was working for Pfizer, and I was selling Viagra in Beverly Hills. There's no easier job in this world. And during that time, I actually had a lot of time on my hands, didn't have to work that hard. I thought a lot about my past life in the Marine Corps and my current life. And I was talking to my soon-to-be business partner, Courtney, who we met in the Marine Corps. And we were talking about how the term leadership was used so differently in this corporate world than what we are used to. Leadership in the private sector was treated like a noun, like it was a job title, like it was a managerial role, that it was a spot on an organizational structure. To us, that wasn't right. That wasn't how we learned to lead. We learned that leadership was a verb. Leadership is action. It's behavior. We also knew that anybody can be a leader. You don't have to be a manager to a leader. We have to be leaders every single day in our lives. I define leadership as a person who influences outcomes and inspires others. Think about that with your world. Do you influence people? Every day. Do you inspire people? Sometimes, right? Depends on when they catch you. But if leadership is about influence and it's about inspiration, leadership is about behavior and it is a choice. You either opt in or you opt out. I have a suspicion by sitting here today, you've opted in. You may not have walked in today thinking that you're a leader, but I hope today you realize that nobody can make you a leader except yourself. You choose to lead. And so with that, if leadership is about behavior, it's about action, I'm gonna transition to our panelists, because if you read their bios, you're gonna be amazed. You may have a hard time seeing yourself within them, but you're gonna listen to their careers, you're gonna learn to see how and what they've done, and you're gonna be inspired to think that, wow, I can do that too. So let's start talking about leadership as action and behavior. And I'm gonna start off with Bobbi here today. I wanna hear about some of the behaviors, Bobbi, that you have done or that you've taken that have gotten you to where you are today.
You know, I think for me, the two that I'll talk about, one is taking risks, and the second is collaboration. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about risk-taking, I'm not saying that you have to, you know, go jump off the side of a cliff or out of an airplane or those kind of things, but it really is about taking on something that perhaps other people didn't want to do, Don't follow somebody else's path, follow your own. I had the opportunity when my kid, I have twins, a boy and a girl, and when they were 13 years old, we had the opportunity to move to El Salvador. This is like a garden spot, who knew? But El Salvador, and my husband said, are you serious, El Salvador? And so we started to talk about it. We called a lot of people that we knew. We talked to people who were living there that were expats. And we decided, okay, well, we're gonna go take a look. So we sat down with our kids one Saturday morning, and my daughter said, this can't be good. These family meetings never turn out to be about anything that's fun. So we said, we're gonna go take a trip next week to El Salvador. And they're like, well, why? I said, because we're gonna look at moving there. And my daughter all of a sudden burst into tears, and she said, you are ruining my life, Mom. Well, then I started crying, and I don't even know why I was crying. I guess because I started to think, am I really gonna ruin my kid's life if I take him out of this country? And so we went to El Salvador, we did our look-see trip, we met some friends for the kids, and what we learned out of that was it was a great risk to take. Kids are way more resilient than you think they are, and our kids thrive, they're fluent in Spanish, we've lived in a couple of other places around the world, and go for it. It will expand your horizons, it'll make you a stronger person. And from a collaboration perspective, I've led global teams. My personality is more collaborative than authoritative, although I can be authoritarian if I need to. But, as you work with different cultures around the world, you also learn that listening and understanding other people's perspectives, which is all part of collaboration, becomes really important. My grandmother told me when I was growing up, you have two ears and one mouth, and you should use them in that proportion. And so that's kind of how I look at collaboration.
That's wonderful. I'd like to hang on this topic from risk for a second, too, because I was, we were talking, Susan, about your background going from automotive to now, wellness and relaxation. And I'd love to hear, but when you think about your career and one of the riskiest moves you've ever taken, when was it and what was it?
Similar to the discussion that we've just been having about how you really need to be open to new ideas, similar to you, Bobby, I started my career off in the automotive world, working for General Motors. As a teenager, working at the transmission plant on the midnight shift. And I did that Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights so that I could help pay for my education. And it was one of those moments that we always remember in those conversations we have with our parents. Both my parents were teachers and said, hey, one of the best educations you're ever going to get is one that you help pay for. And I think that was really an important lesson for me, that I needed to be able to balance and get meaning out of the education that I was getting, because I was putting the hard work and effort into that. Fast forward almost three decades with General Motors, which I had was never really part of the plan. I actually had envisioned that I was going to go to law school. But what I needed to learn on my journey where I was growing up at General Motors is that I needed to be open to ideas. And Bobby, similar to your story about El Salvador, I moved 19 different times with General Motors. I lived in five different countries, and I had exactly the same experience that you had in El Salvador with my daughter when I told her that we were getting on a plane to go to Shanghai, China, for our look-see visit because we were going to go and live in China. Same experience, the tears, I'm ruining her life. But you fast forward to where she is now. By the time she got to grade eight, she had already been to nine schools. And when you have an opportunity in your career to go and experience new countries, new cultures, and how diverse our world is, the amount of growth that you will have personally, you would never have expected. And believe it or not, you will change as an individual in terms of how you view things, how you lead, and the kinds of teams that you'll put together as a leader. After 30 years with General Motors and helping people experience the freedom of the open road by having, for many people, a car for the first time in their lives or in their parents' lives, especially in a place like China, I really wanted to go and do something different. Canyon Ranch wasn't necessarily on my radar screen. My last position with GM was president and managing director of Chevrolet and Cadillac in Europe. And when I left the company after 30 years, I felt like I needed to take a year and figure out what it was that I wanted to do. In many ways, GM chose me, but I knew in the next chapter I needed to figure out what I wanted, and I chose very carefully. And I'm now with the health and wellness business, and this whole switch of changing industries from something that was very male-dominated to now being in health and wellness and in the company that I'm in, where our guests are 75% women, has been, you know, a complete change for me. But what has not changed is what being a leader is all about. Making sure that you work hard, that you're a great role model for your people, that you're a confident leader, but one that's balanced with lots of humility. I will tell you that, you know, yes, I'm learning a new industry because I'm only 18 months into it, but what I'm carrying with me as I changed industry is all the incredible lessons that I learned about leadership and living around the world.
That's wonderful. And so you both, so Bobby and Susan, you're talking about, you know, opportunities coming to you to move and explore. Lee, I'd like to ask you, how do you make yourself stand out for those opportunities? So people want you to go places, you want you to do things. What have you done through your career? What are some of the behaviors that make you just a standout, credible leader that opportunities come your way?
So I'm going to frame it in just what I've been known and labeled as. Have any of you guys ever been labeled as a female? So I was labeled...
Like by being labeled a female?
Yeah. I was labeled a cheerleader. Anybody in the room ever been labeled a cheerleader? So it was interesting for me to kind of learn how to grow into understand what that meant for me in my career. And I have a little story around it, if it's okay if I can share it.
Yeah, please do. So
I worked for Cisco, and in the division that I work in is primarily male-dominated in the leadership roles. And I was given some coaching several times. You need to tone down the rah-rah. You guys ever heard that before? Just a little bit less of that. So I struggled with it. I struggled with it a lot, and I went to a women's conference and met Cynthia Good, who's the former editor of the Pink magazine. And I went up to her after a session like this and said, you know, I'm getting some coaching that I need to tone down the rah-rah, and it really is something that bothers me, because intuitively and authentic me as who I am, I don't feel like I can tone down the rah-rah, because that's what makes me different as a leader. That's what makes me stand out. And she gave me the best advice. So please empower and go to the sisterhood for help, because that's what I did. And I asked her, I said, well, what would I do? And she said, Lee, you need to look them straight in the face, pat them on the shoulder, and tell them, that's called inspirational leadership, and we women are really good at it, and anytime they need any coaching, please come to you. Yay! So what it did to me is it really helped me understand a label that I had. I turned it into a brand, and my team's here today. They will tell you I'm a lot of rah-rah, but at the end of the day, it makes me who I am as a leader authentic, and I embraced it, and once I did, as opposed to struggled within the world that I am, I feel a lot more empowered and have a lot more fun.
No, that's really wonderful. I'd love to talk to you, Nina, about authentic leadership, because you have a really tough industry. It's well documented how tough your industry is. How have you maintained truth to who you are in a really male-dominated culture?
Well, it's very interesting, and I think many of us can relate to this. I do work in a very male-dominated, sexist, misogynistic industry, I'm ashamed to say. But I have to share with you that part of finding that authentic voice came from a very young age. I was raised in a small town in upstate New York. I'm the product of a mixed marriage, so I'm Puerto Rican on one half, I'm Jewish on the other. I was the only Jewish kid in my school growing up. I was also the only Puerto Rican kid in my school growing up, which made me an outsider, I was marginalized. Fortunately, I had a core group of friends who I was close with, but I was the victim of antisemitism, racism, and I learned at a very early age what those words sounded like. And I looked into the faces of the people who called me those names, and I will never forget that. But part of me said, growing up, being raised by a political family, a family who was proud of who we were, was that I had value. That I, at a very early age, had to learn to stand up, be myself, be confident, be brave. But I was just one small girl. And my mother would say to me, you know, your voice right now is just one small voice. But when you grow up and when you go out into the world and you see more people who look like you, who sound like you, who have the same ideas that you have, she said, your voice will be stronger. She said, but also never forget to listen. That was something very important too. And coming from a Latin Jewish culture, we talk a lot. And we tell a lot of stories. And it was ironic that I would find my way to a field where I would be listening to a lot of stories. And prior to that, I started as an actress because I had stories to tell. I had stories to share. I thought that would be the form in which I would find success. Unfortunately, it was not. And I was not successful as an actress. And what I carried around with me was a sense of failure, a sense that I had not accomplished my dream. And I really thought back and I said, you know, if I feel this way, there are millions of other women that feel that way as well. We set goals for ourselves. We set standards for ourselves. Sometimes they're unrealistic, but that's not to say we shouldn't dream and we shouldn't have those goals. And all of a sudden I realized that I could find a way to tell my stories, to be who be myself, be authentic, be half Puerto Rican, be half Jewish, be a woman starting in a field and having a family where all the other women I worked with, which were very few, none of them were married, none of them had children. And they looked at me like I was some kind of alien. Like, who are you? How dare you think you can have a life, you can have a family, and you can have a career? But what I realized too is that this is still, the TV business is about everybody in this room. It is imperative that my field reflect the diversity and the uniqueness of every single voice in this room. And I feel what has happened in terms of leadership in the entertainment industry, every employee is a leader, every producer is a leader, every writer on a staff is a leader, every actor on a call sheet is a leader. And that empowerment, that sense of community, is really where I believe Hollywood is headed. And obviously there is a great deal of pressure, and rightfully so, for our business to continue to diversify. And it's a long road there, and we're really just at the very beginning of it. But I think what really mattered most to me was finding my way in a field where I can be myself, the rah-rah. I can be someone who comes from theater and find my way into a multi-million dollar media, billion dollar media corporation, and still be proud of who I am as an individual and the value of the contributions I have to make.
That's wonderful. Thank you. And I know we're talking a lot about authenticity and the power of bringing your whole self to work and not to be downplaying your weaknesses or your differences, but to really understand them and figure out how to explore them. And it's obviously you look around. This is a women's leadership conference. I'm gonna switch to Bobby for a second. I'd like to hear from you. How has being a woman helped you in your career?
Well, you know, certainly there are opportunities that if you raise your hand as a woman, people will say, we'd love to take you up on that. You know, I think that, so I started my career at IBM, and I was in software, and I decided that, well, actually people said, hey, you know, we think that you would be a really good manager. I really wanted to be a systems engineer at the time, and I was in software support, and I thought systems engineering, pre-sales, that would really be a lot of fun. And then they kept saying, no, you need to be in management, you know, you're really good with people, and you're a good coach. I thought, well, okay. So I happened to be at a retirement party for one of our colleagues, And I met the gentleman who was the branch manager for IBM in Fort Worth, Texas. And he managed a group of hardware customer engineers at the time. And these guys carried tool bags and they worked on big IBM mainframe equipment. And I knew what that stuff looked like, but I had no idea what was in those tool bags. So I had this conversation with this guy, his name was Roger. And he said to me, well, what do you want to do next? And I said, well, you know, everybody keeps telling me I ought to be a manager. And, you know, I think I would like to do that in Fort Worth. And I lived in Dallas at the time. So the next Monday, I come into the office, and not my boss, but my boss's boss came into my office. And he said, hey, I got a call from Roger, and he wants you to come this week for an interview. I was like, really? And so I went for this interview and got hired. And what I found was I was the first female hardware field manager for IBM in Fort Worth, Texas. And my customers were General Dynamics, Lockheed Martin, the Federal Aviation Administration, Bell Helicopter Textron, and General Telephone. And the minute I started, my manager, Roger, started to get calls from our customers saying, what are you thinking? This is a woman. We've never had a woman, you know, and these are like good old boys and, you know, in these companies. And they all came to work in cowboy boots and, you know, it was that kind of environment. And the guy that I replaced was loved by his team, he was loved by his customers, and he had gotten promoted into a new job. So, you know, my boss called me in and he said, hey, I think you need to know that this is the environment that you're walking into. Well, I went home that night and I told my husband, I was 26 years old, and I told my husband, I think this is it. You know, I'm not sure that I'm gonna last 30 days in this job. I don't know, you know, I don't know what to do. I had never been in a place where people didn't want me in that position, you know, on the client side. And so every day I would come in, I'd get a pep talk from Roger, and he'd say, you can do this. You know, you're really bright. I wouldn't have hired you if you didn't have the capability. You're really good with your team. And so about 6 months in, I got a call at 2 o'clock in the morning, and this was from Bell Helicopter, and one of their mainframe systems had gone down. So they said, your guys have been here working on it, but we think they need some help. So I got up, put on my clothes, got in my car, drove over to the client location, sitting in the data center, and they said, this mainframe's down. The part that we need is, it was at the time about a $100,000 part, and we had none in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So I got on the phone with the guys in Poughkeepsie, New York. We chartered a plane, we flew the part in. And, you know, at that point in time, I thought, who am I going to call? I had to trust my own instincts. Right now, it's like 3 a.m. I'm not going to wake anybody up. So I made the decision to charter the plane, get the part. We went into the, I sent my guys home when everything was fixed. I went to the customer meeting the next morning with the CIO and all of his executives. And after that, they called my boss, and word kind of spread like wildfire. They said, "Okay, she's all right." But what they were worried about was that as a woman, I wasn't gonna take the call at 2 o'clock in the morning and get out of bed and get in my car and drive somewhere, you know, and all of these things. And so, you know, I think that being a woman helped Roger hire me, because they're, you know, I was setting a precedent. But then I think I also was able to, you know, kind of blaze the trail in that piece of the world. And now there's been a number of women who have followed in the footsteps.
So what I love about her story too, if we're thinking about actions to take in our own life, right? Stating that, you know, manager, I think I'm open to this opportunity. I'm open. And then preparation, and then credibility, right? Mm-hmm. Here's the bar, here's me. And being able to every day show up like that. And again, having mentors. So when your confidence is low, somebody else can be there to say, no, you can
absolutely
do it. And so we were talking
having
about—
having the cheerleader.
Having the cheerleader, yeah. In this case, it was Roger was the rah-rah
that's
guy.
Right, that's right.
And I'd like to hear from you, Susan, because we were talking about this too, just kind of like showing up authentically and putting yourself out there and being, you know, who you are. We were talking about the value of authenticity. And as a woman leader especially, do you put a guard up? How real can you be, right, as a leader? I'd like to hear you talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, thank you. just as we were walking in here, we were having a quick discussion about this whole idea of being authentic. And for every single one of you here in the room, you are your own brand. And you need to feel very comfortable and confident with who you are. We all have positives and negatives, but really understanding what your brand is and what you have to offer. And when opportunities like what Bobby just talked about come up, don't raise your hand like, well, maybe I'll try it. Try it. Raise your hand high. You're capable of more than what you actually think. And especially if you've got a good mentor or a good support system. And by the way, those support systems come from both men and women. Mm-hmm. And in my 30 years in automotive, the majority of my support system actually came from men because that's all there were. And you know who they are in your organization. They're the kind of people that trust you, that you trust, that you have respect and integrity for. But this whole idea of making sure that you are going to be authentic becomes really important. You know, there are days when you aren't going to be the cheerleader and you aren't going to have the highest level of energy because you've come in from an international flight at 3 o'clock in the morning and you get your house at 4 and the alarm goes off at 5 and you have to start all over again. We all do the same. We're all up early. You've got a shower and the makeup and the kids and the phone and the emails and the groceries and, oh, by the way, there's no eggs in the fridge and running off to 7-Eleven. It's hard. It's hard work. But when you do get to work, be confident in what your abilities are. We had a quick discussion about, you know, what do you show at work and do you let your guard down? I think that the best leaders, whether you're male or female, don't have a guard. You don't need it. When you make a difference in an organization or in something that you are leading, it's because people get to see all of you. And they're there to support you on a day that you're not going to necessarily be feeling your best. But they also learn when you need support. And I think one of the biggest lessons that I had, especially in my 20s and 30s when I was doing a lot of this on my own before I met my husband and I was traveling all over as a single woman, I had to get to the point where I began to trust my own instincts. And I sometimes had to be my own cheerleader. And that's okay when it's early in your career. Trust in yourself. And have those candid conversations with yourself when you do need some support. And I guarantee you, if you raise your hand and have some conversations with people about the kind of support you need or the feedback you need. I think as women too, we don't, you know, we're very concerned about how we're gonna be perceived in an organization. And we don't necessarily ask for as much feedback as we should. Don't be afraid to do that. And don't be afraid of what you're going to hear, because you're not always going to hear the positive parts like what we've all said. And be open to that constructive feedback, because you're going to learn from it. And by the way, the sky will be the limit for each and every one of you here in the room.
I love that too. And I think that there is a lot of pressure for women to try to show up perfectly. Who do you need me to be? Okay, great. I can go into character. But the reality is, and the message that's being reinforced, is that we're unique and there's a tremendous amount of value there. And so the pressure to be perfect, we just gotta swipe it off the table. So the reality too then is that we're imperfect. You know, everyone in this room, ourselves included, have made mistakes. In fact, if you're gonna hear your panel, they're gonna say that's part of the growth and development, if not the catapult for your success. So I'm gonna start with Lee and then Nina. I want you to talk about just your mistakes, your failures, the big ones, not the polite ones you say at cocktail parties. Oh, once I was just too prepared for a meeting and it went wrong. I want to hear just like the good ones, like the ones that, you know what, I really screwed up, but this is what I did to get back in the game. So Lee?
So it's an interesting story because it's not really work related, but it's life related. My husband's in the military, and we've had a really interesting ride together, and the fact that we're trying to support dual careers. I don't know if you guys ride that happy ride every day. And when he and I got married, it was midway in his career. So he was a commanding officer, and I don't know if you guys know, but when your spouse becomes a commanding officer, you basically become the commanding officer's spouse, and you have jobs, duties that you have to do. And I embraced them, but it was a big shock for me because I was a career person. I was a sales leader, and I took that job. So the Atlantic Fleet asked me to come and be on a working session with other wives in the military that were commanders or had command, and they asked me to be involved, and I was the only female that had a job, the only one. And so they asked me to be involved and give them advice on how to really adapt to having spouses, Navy spouses in this case, that have a career. Well, I made a mistake because I was pretty vocal. And I said, well, there's a rule book. And there really was, guys, a green rule book that you open up and it says, as a Navy spouse, you're supposed to do this and this and this. And I read it and I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I felt like I was in the 50s. I felt like I was in a time warp. But also, too, I wanted to be true to my husband and respect the fact that I was there supporting his career. So I went up to the head of the Atlantic Fleet's wife and told her she needed to take this book and throw it in the fireplace. Blasphemy. So it was something that I felt really strongly about, that I had conviction, but at the end of the day, the turnaround of the impact that that had on us as a family, of being a little bit of a, oh, they're different kind of people, and just kind of not following the rules, and if you know anything about the military, which Angie does, you need to follow the rules. So it was kind of an interesting, delicate balance, but what we were able to do over a period of time, because it didn't happen miraculously in a week or two, was they were able to embrace the fact that they wanted to listen, but it took them a while to absorb the coaching that I gave them, or the feedback, what do you want to call it, advice, my opinion, that we needed to change and things needed to be different. So it was a mistake, because my husband definitely was known as, oh, you have that wife. guilty. But it was a learning process for me, too, to also understand kind of the limits and the boundaries and respect the rules, sometimes as a leader and as a wife, but also to understand that you need to be open and people will accept your change, but not as quickly as I wanted. Yeah. So that was kind of oops, but it turned out okay, I think.
Sorry. So patience, wait it out, and don't give up. How about you, Nina? I'd love to hear about, you know, the importance of resilience, but really resilience out of failure.
Yes.
Talk about your mistakes.
Well, I want to start by asking everybody in the room, how many are mothers? So there's a lot of us here. So I'm just going to go off on a little tangent, and then I'll bring it back around. We are a very united community. We're also a very diverse community. Everybody has a different style of parenting. Everybody has a different advice that they've given their children. I also feel that we as a community of women have been over-hyphenated to death. Either you're a working mom, a tiger mom, a soccer mom, a helicopter mom, a stay-at-home mom, and it goes on and on and on. Well, I always feel that that's been sort of like this secret way to sort of fractionalize the base. We're all one big community, and there's strength in looking at the size and the scope of our community. But I struggled. I mean, as I said before, I came up in a business at a time when there were very few women and very few were married, because there was a lot of hanky-panky going around. And there were very few marriages that lasted, because it's Hollywood. And God forbid you have children. It's like, oh, are your priorities screwed? I mean, nobody would take me seriously. I'll never forget walking into meetings, like and I literally worked up until about the week before both of my kids were born, would walk into a meeting and I was enormous. I gained 60 pounds with both my kids. So here I am in an office setting, almost 180 pounds. So I was huge, and I would walk in with tight sweaters, big belly, and people would look at me and they would talk to my belly. I mean, they would realize, it's like, what kind of crazy person is this? Why do you think you can have a career, a family? What's the matter with you? But I had my children, and I will tell you, I was really hard on myself as a mother. I mean, I have one example that not only did I feel like a failure, but I felt shame and I was embarrassed. You know, my kids, you know, were always dealing with my crazy schedule and my long hours. And it was show business. Why should there be such crazy hours? But there were. Show business has a lot of needy people in it. So in any case, I will never forget this one day, and it sits with me to this day, and thank God my son, who is 28 years old, and bless his heart, is the most wonderful child in the world, and I have an 18-year-old daughter. But I will never forget, and I tried to do everything. I tried to do it all. I was there for every soccer game. I was there for every t-ball game. I was there for every volleyball game. I was there for every parent-teacher conference, sometimes a little late, sometimes on my cell phone, all of that, but I was there. And I will never forget my poor son. He was, I guess, about 8 or 9 years old. I was so excited. And what I used to do, and I'm sure many of us did it here, I used to stockpile birthday gifts in the closet. So whenever there was a birthday party to go to, it was like, oh, grab that gift, you know. And I will never forget the day that he had a birthday party. And I was very excited, I had the gift wrapped, everything, we're all set to go. I had had a screening that morning, but I was gonna make it to the party, we're gonna get there in time. So I take my adorable son, throw him in the back of the car, we get to the party, I'm like, God, it's awfully quiet around here. You know, it's an 8-year-old birthday party, it should be like raucous and wild. And I thought, well, maybe they're in the back, and this poor little child is walking with me, and he's very excited about the party. And, you know, I walk around to the backyard, and there's silence, there's nobody there. And I thought, oh my God, maybe I missed the day wrong, and maybe the time is wrong. And I walked around to the back door and I looked in and the family was just kind of sitting there watching television. and here's my little boy ready to go to a birthday party. And I realized the party was the day before. And even now I talk about it and I get emotional because you think that is the nature of what we do. It's a balance, it's a struggle, it's a challenge, but know that we're all in it together. That's what matters most. And again, that was 10, 15 years ago. A lot has changed, and yet a lot stays the same. So I could say that was one of the most distressing times in my life, but I can tell you now that my son, who is a strong, outspoken feminist, and really is a strong supporter of women who work and women who have careers. It was a defining moment for me and one that hopefully I maybe in this moment I have finally overcome. So thank you.
I think she's gonna need a hug after. This is the final question for this panel, but you're bringing something up so important, and I'll have to say, I've done that too, Nina. I feel your pain. And luckily he was 4 and he doesn't remember, so dodge that bullet for the long run. But you're bringing up a really important point about the divisions that women leaders make often in their careers. You know, oh, you're a working mom, or you're a stay-at-home mom, or you're all these other things that divide us. When really, we as women, we should feel united. And so, really quickly, and we'll go through the panel, start with you, Bobby, Lee, and Susan, and back to Nina. How do you create inclusive environments where people can feel free to not just, you know, hey, it's Friday, I gotta go to my kid's thing, not just a woman thing, it can be somebody's religious practice that's very different than yours. How do you create that environment? And so just, I know in a couple seconds, an answer to a really big question, but how do you make people feel, be okay to be okay?
I think the first thing is you have to be a role model. So if you are constantly creating an environment where the last, you have to be there until like the last person walks out the door and there's no flexibility, which, you know, is what one of the things that I love about working for a company like Dell. I think you have to choose your spots, right? Pick where you want to be, and you have to work in a place that has the same values that you have. And so if flexibility is important to you, if the ability to go to your children's soccer games or piano recitals or whatever it is important, then you know you have to role model that behavior as a leader, and you have to have a company that's very supportive, and that's why I choose to work at Dell.
So the dual fit is key. How about you, Lee? How do you create that inclusive environment where people feel okay to be themselves?
So there's two things. One is just making sure that I keep my radar up and being aware. Because so much, I don't know, with you guys every day, you look up and, you know, it's 5 o'clock, where did the day go? And what the risk of that is being losing sight to what's going on with the people that you work with every day. So I try to stay in touch with people and make sure that they're okay and let them know when I'm not having a good day. And try to be honest with them of, hey, it's really tough. I need to just take some time, or I'm in a bad mood, cranky mood, whatever. So I try to keep my radar open to most of the people that I work with and I'm happy to work with every day and make sure that they're okay. I know it sounds simple, but it's hard, especially just to, hey, how's your day? How are you? Are you okay? The other part is being, it's kind of a funky word. I don't know if I want to use it, transparent. And letting people know I have important things going on in my life, not to be braggadocious or ta-da or whatever, but letting them know ahead of time it's okay to arrange your whole life around your husband's grandson's third birthday. I mean, my whole team knew, hey, I'm out of here because I'm going to Asheville and I'm going to be at a three-year-old birthday party. So, I mean, they did. They're laughing. They did. They knew that it was Jameson's birthday. So being able to be vulnerable and let people know, yeah, you know, at the end of the day, when I take my shoes off at night, I'm just like them. We're all people in the sisterhood or the family of Cisco that we live in, and try to be aware and let them know. It's nothing really too crazy. It's just more being them being aware who I am.
That's wonderful. How about you, Susan?
Yeah, I concur with everything we've just heard, but as leaders, you'll always have an opportunity to bring new people onto your team. You're going to have people retire. You're going to have people exit or move to another city. One of the things that I role model with my team when we're interviewing people, and you're looking for very specific leadership behaviors or management behaviors or skills or expertise, but what I add to the list when I'm asking my team to be hiring a new team member or I'm hiring someone from my executive team is I test for inclusivity when I'm hiring someone. So we're setting up what we're going to value and respect in how we work with each other. I'm getting ready to take vacation next week. I would assume many of you also are going to be celebrating the Thanksgiving holiday, and it takes preparation, but being, you know, very transparent to your comment about the fact that, yes, I am going to unplug next week, and I'm not going to be picking up either cell phone, of which I've got two, next week, and here's the day, so, you know, this is your opportunity to demonstrate your leadership and support me while I'm going to go take a few days off. And I think, yes, it's role model, but it's also being vocal about what your actions are going to be, just in case people don't fully understand why you're doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Nina, too, how do you create an inclusive environment?
Well, I think a couple of ways. One is, I don't know, again, I'm a joiner. I join things, and for many of us in the room, I would expect that people are kind of serial joiners too, you know, which is you get involved, you expose yourself to different experiences, and then what's so exciting is to bring that back into your group. And so I encouraged all of the people that I've been fortunate enough to work with over the years at CBS, at Warner Brothers, at the talent agency, get involved, get engaged in your community, and bring that back in. And one of the things we're able to do, and I really feel everybody benefits from this, is from senior management down to executive assistant, finding every opportunity to bring all of those groups together, all of those voices together, and bring in people from the outside. Periodically, we would reach out to sociologists at UCLA. We would reach out to speakers from different areas of not only our business, but social organizations and so on. Bring them in, and the people who would participate in those forums together, as I said, from senior management down to executive assistant, because we all have equal value. That was the most important thing. Every person who participated, every person who had something to say, again, from the CEO of the corporation down to the person who was the guard at the front desk when you came into CBS that morning, they could be involved. And that created such an environment of inclusivity and really validated everybody's right to be there, because you all have a right to be there. And I think, like I said, reaching out into the community, collecting that information, and bringing that back into your core group.
Oh, that's wonderful. And we're going to invite Pam up here for Q&A. And I'll just add one small quick note to the inclusivity, too. For me personally, I like to surround myself with people who think differently than me. This last election was painful for that, because you do hear opinions different than yours, but it is so important to be open to them. So if you want, you know, people to worship you, or worshipers, go to church. But if you want people to really challenge your intellect, invite them in, invite difference in, because you grow from those experiences. And so I think, again, we're all women, but there's so much value in diversity, not just, you know, ethnic diversity, it's gender diversity too. So I'll pass
it
up to you.
Thank you very much, and thanks to our panel, Angie. So I'm gonna take a seat, and we have microphones in the back of the room. I see a couple, and then of course, come up here. We would love to have questions or feedback. So as you guys are heading towards the mic, let me make sure I can see the mics. But or head up front, either way, come ask your questions. I'll start with, I am not an artist, but if I were, and I was drawing a word cloud, you know, those fun artists that sit there and draw all these paintings, there were three things that I heard very consistently, but maybe said in a different way, which was be authentic, which is now rah-rah. That is, it has been redefined as rah-rah. Take risks, raise your hand, be open to new ideas, all in that same area. And then embrace collaboration. And I would challenge everyone that those are actual skills and competencies. And when we think about, as we go forward the next few hours today, gender differences isn't just about difference of thought, diversity of thought. What you've heard today is we actually do our jobs differently, right? And so if you're in HR, if you are a talent, if you're a recruiter, I really encourage you to figure out how you can value those competencies that we just heard that are strengths of women, and make sure that we promote based on those competencies and value those. So raise your hand if you have a question. Is that a mic right there?
Yeah.
Great, okay, perfect, thank you.
Hi, my name's Megan Williams. I work at Dell. Today is my 1 year anniversary of working at Dell.
Yay!
prior to that, I spent about 16 and a half years at Samsung here in Austin. My background is in engineering, and so I very often was the only woman in the room. And I've been in a leadership position for about 10 years, and so I'm curious for the panel, one thing I've struggled with is walking the line between being labeled a bitch or being soft. And I feel like that's a standard that that my male counterparts don't have held to them, so I'm curious for your experiences with that.
Anyone want to take that first? Has anyone here been called a bitch before?
I don't understand, but bitch is not a bad word, by the way, in my opinion. But go ahead.
Well, I would say that, you know, especially in a kind of more free-form industry where I come from, everybody has a very loud mouth. Everybody has something to say, so I found myself very comfortable. But, you know, I was always worried about, oh, am I hurting somebody's feelings? Am I stepping on somebody's toes? Am I sort of creeping into an area that I shouldn't be? And I have to tell you, what I did learn to be called a bitch. I did learn to be called, you know, I'm stepping out of line, which I got a lot. And you know what? I really feel that we're at a time where we have abandoned the rules of civility. And I feel that I have now stood up and said, you know, I don't want to be called a bitch. You know, I am strong. I have a point of view. And I expect and respect the people with whom I work. So having been on the receiving side of it, you know, I call it out when I see it. And make sure that people know that it is not accepted. And if I've had to engage in an email back and forth with people until I got my position heard and respected, I did so. But I just, you know, I've kind of zero tolerance for that. Now, it was okay when I was working my way through the business and I didn't know that I had the right to stand up and say, I don't want to tolerate it. But I also feel we now have systems within our respective organizations to go and say, you know what? It's not going to work for me anymore.
Thanks,
you
Megan.
I'll throw a thought in there too. When I was in the Marine Corps, I was called a lot of things, the B word included. And you just get to a point when you realize, what can I control here? I can't control perspectives. I can't control your experiences with women leaders, but what I can control is how I show up every day. I can be credible. I can know the standards, I can exceed them, I can care about people, I can build inclusive environments, I can be confident, I can be all these things, but I can't control you. So I say control what you can control, understand leadership fundamentals, really rise to the occasion, and go forward.
Thanks, Megan. All right, next question.
Hi, my name is Gretchen Lynch, and I'm a university student and a screenwriter and producer, so my question is for Nina. I found it very easy to be in a boardroom full of men and just receive a pat on the head or a good job for working the hardest and doing my job well, pitching the ideas and bringing in the content that we work on. So my question is, when you were breaking into production, how were you able to establish yourself as a strong leader with all of these isms that we've discussed and while staying true to who you are?
Well, I did work my way up through the ranks. I forgot to say that when I first moved to California, from New York, where I was working off Broadway for multiple years, I had a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree. I knew nobody, and I needed to get a job. So I started as a receptionist, answering telephones, photocopying resumes, and being an assistant at the same time, being the first one in every morning, being the last one out every day. But I was a receptionist answering telephones. So that's where I started and worked my way up through the ranks. One of the things that I will say that I have been able to do and I recognized early on was to identify strong women with whom I could partner, I could learn from, I could listen to, I could complain to, and as I was able to work my way up through the ranks, I would bring more women in as showrunners, as writers, as producers, as grips on the set, directors. Hollywood has a terrible stat these days of hiring women directors. It's really kind of embarrassing. So what I would say is seeking out those women with whom you could connect. And there are many organizations in LA, women in film, both in television, and there are women's organizations throughout the industry. Network, engage, be a part of it, and find female partners with whom you can continue to grow your career.
The one comment I would add for all of us is that there's no substitute for hard work.
Right. Mm-hmm.
There really isn't. And we're, all of us, I'm sure, started at the same similar situation, or like myself, working midnights at a transmission plant. You know, working your way up and understanding the business and building all of those relations pays off. Yeah. Trust us.
Excellent. So I think we have a question over here.
Hi. Hi. I don't have a question, but I just wanted to make a comment. And I'm really nervous right now, but I'm going to face my fear.
There you go.
Do it.
You
got it. Go, Helen.
excuse me. So what I find, and I believe in being authentic, I'm a straight shooter. What you see is what you get, not just because I'm a Bostonian, because that's how I feel.
Go Boston. Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of times, like, there's a stigma to women. Like, for instance, myself. I'm single. I'm 48 years old. I was never blessed to have children. But doesn't mean that, like, you know, my life isn't just as busy as the next woman, like Nina, right? Yes. And so I feel, I just want to say that, you know, maybe sometimes I feel as women that we're very judgmental, you know what I mean? Thinking like, you know, how does she do it? You know, when she's got a family, where maybe they don't know my side of my story. Like, you know, I'm a parent to my parents who are aging, you know. I have a sister that has disabilities, and I just think, sometimes we shouldn't be so judgmental just because you're a woman and you're married and you have kids, or if you're a single mom, because everybody has a story.
That's it.
Thank you.
I also have to add to that, I think the danger we get as leaders is when we make assumptions, right? Oh, because you don't have children, you don't mind doing X. Or, oh, because you have children, you're not going to want to come in on Saturday. Don't assume. I think that's a great opportunity.
Any other, here we go, a question right here.
Hi, my name is Aziza Farooqi by profession. I'm a computer professional, but outside of that, I'm also the president of a women's organization for the past 16 years. Right. And like Nina, my grown-up son is also a feminist. I did want to ask a reverse question of what the first lady asked. Bobby, I think you mentioned humility, leadership with humility. How do you propose women showing humility without it being perceived as shyness or submissiveness?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I think that you can show humility in a number of different ways without being perceived as weak or shy. I prefer to take a fact-based approach to the way I lead. There's a lot of emotion that runs around in all kinds of situations, right? Every single day at work, the drama is there. If you want to let it take over, it will. But I think, you know, coming to the table, building that credibility through using facts, through bringing people together. As a leader, if people come to the office and they say, well, this one, you know, did this to me, and then the other one comes in and says, yeah, you know, I don't get along with that person, I bring them both together, sit in a room, we have the conversation. So again, you kind of bring the facts to the table. But the other piece of it is, it's not always about you as a leader. It's about being a leader is really about inspiring the team to do things that they never thought they could do, right? And so if you see them doing that, recognizing and rewarding the work, making sure that the team is getting the credit, not always the leader. I wouldn't be sitting up here on the stage with all of these incredible people if, you know, I just didn't have wonderful people who had supported me throughout my career and wonderful team members who are, quite frankly, back at the office today, keeping the lights on and things going. And I think as a leader, you have to recognize the accomplishments of all of those people around you, and that lifts you up as a leader. So I don't think it's a sign of weakness. I just think, again, making sure you're recognizing the team, you're dealing in facts and keeping the emotion out of it, and letting others take the credit.
Thanks so much. And some of us will be up here if you have more questions after. But before you guys leave, I do want to let you know that both Nina and Angie will be signing their books downstairs in the main center, so please do take an opportunity to come up and say hello and get a signed book. And thank you all very much. And again, guys, look forward to the rest of the day.